Welcome to What the Health, a podcast where we explore the key health issues that are often dismissed. I'm James Jensen, a functional medical practitioner and owner of Hella Health, a holistic clinic focused on treating the root cause of issues rather than the symptoms, by connecting the dots and giving you practical and evidence-based solutions.
And I'm Julie Johnston, one of James's clients, and I also happen to be his PR consultant who, let's be honest, basically strong-armed him into doing this podcast.
So if you've been going around in circles, feeling dismissed and not getting the results you deserve, then you're in the right place.
Because as you always say, James, just because something is common doesn't mean it's normal.
Exactly. So let's drill down to what's really going on.
Okay, James, we have a super topical chat today. Are hormones hijacking your brain? This is something that I know a lot of our listeners will be able to relate to and will be very keen for you to share your wisdom with us. So can you tell us a little bit to get us started? What are hormones and, how do they affect the body?
Sure. So I guess really when we talk about, hormones, and I guess their impact on the brain, we're really talking about a lot of the sex hormones in particular. So things like progesterone, estrogen, and testosterone. And I guess anyone that's ever suffered from PMS or anything like that. So, in the lead up to their period, they might feel like a bit of a crazy person and, in all the other, days and weeks of the month, they feel normal. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's an example of how your hormones can hijack your brain. And to give a bit more of a specific example, what we find is that progesterone in particular, which will sort of peak around ovulation and sort of continue for the next sort of up to 14 days, that progesterone is a really powerful dopamine activator. So dopamine makes you feel happy, safe, calm, motivated, in control, improves libido as well, which is often why, women might find their partner a lot more attractive around that sort of time.
Because that's the time where your body is physically ready to make the baby, right?
Correct.
So that's why it's releasing all those feel-good hormones so that you want to get to it.
Yes. So, women who are ovulating, generally they'll feel their absolute best around ovulation. And then estrogen, if it's in excess, I find that it mimics low serotonin. So they'll feel, emotional, anxious, dwell, overthink, care too much. A good example would be, you might see an ad on TV that's a little bit sad or watch a movie and all of a sudden you're crying and it's really not that sort of, sad and everyone's looking at you going, oh, that's not a big deal. Why are you crying about the puppy?
Yep. There are certainly some days of the months where you just want to cry at everything and you're like, oh, it's not that sad. I absolutely can relate to that. So, you touched on some of the symptoms that we kind of see and that they're often in the lead up to that period. So some of the other symptoms that can kind of come with when hormones are kind of taking over, can you talk to us about poor sleep?
Yeah. So again, progesterone is a really powerful dopamine and even GABA activator. So GABA is one of your main neuroinhibitory neurotransmitters. So with that nice progesterone surge, you get a little bit of extra GABA activity as well. So women will often sleep better with better progesterone, which is why, if we're looking along the lines of hormone replacement therapy, say in perimenopause or menopause, the addition of progesterone is a really powerful sleep aid. So definitely, again, in the lead up to a period, let's just say that's when progesterone is falling, so you're losing what I call the handbrake to crazy. Mm. And then if your body's then busy trying to detoxify estrogen, or if it becomes the dominant hormone. So if estrogen, again, like I said, it can mimic low serotonin, so you can have, be more emotional, anxious, dwell, overthink. So you can pretty soon see how your brain is wired and, it's going to affect sleep because you'll be busy and you'll be overthinking and all those things. So yeah, the handbrake to crazy is missing and the crazy dial is turned right up.
Yeah, I think that is a really great way of explaining it. And, so touching on those moods, like you mentioned PMS, but which most people are familiar with that term. One of the other terms that people aren't so familiar with is the PMDD, so premenstrual dysphoric disorder. I think it's really only started to get a little bit of airtime in recent years. Can you talk to us about that and the difference of that between PMS?
Yeah, I guess the easiest way to think of it is PMS on steroids. So the dial is turned right up on the PMS type symptoms. And I guess that's really, you know, like the proper hijack of the brain. So, you know, completely irrational. You know, some women, you know, may even feel suicidal. You know, they just feel like there's absolutely no control whatsoever on what things are. So, you know, might be like, you know, lying on the floor crying, you know, just can't do anything for themselves. So it's a very serious and obviously a horrible thing to suffer from.
Mm.
And the typical treatments for that that you would sort of get, if it was acknowledged by your doctor, would be, you know, they might look at putting you on antidepressants. And for me, the reason I don't like that is because whilst in some women it might manage those symptoms, it's not really addressing the why. So if the why is the hormones, it makes more sense to me rather than try and put your brain in a chemical straitjacket to really work on the hormones. And I mean, good news is that it has now been recognized as an actual medical condition. So it's on the World Health Organization list of actual medical conditions, which is a big step forward for all those women who have known that they've been suffering from something like that. I guess it's a bit of justification for them.
Yeah, and look, I'm quite happy to share with listeners that, you know, probably about 5 years ago, I was actually diagnosed with PMDD, but that diagnosis came after a lot of years of suffering until I got to the absolute lowest point of my life. And, you know, when you mentioned about sitting, you know, laying on the floor, you physically had to visit my home to drop some, you know, supplements off to me because I was literally on the floor and couldn't function, and just repeatedly being misdiagnosed and even outright told by psychiatrists that I just had a, you know, anger problem. And I was like, but it's only one point of the month where I just can't control it. So the feeling, I can say from experience, in my experience, the feelings in the body, the hormones completely are hijacking you. That handbrake to crazy has long gone, and you literally, it's like an out-of-body experience that you cannot control. So, you know, it is quite a scary and difficult time, and it's great that it is now starting to be more widely known and there are practitioners who are actually helping address it, because with treatment, you know, it can make such a difference. So I think that's a great description from you of how that all occurs with that. So, you know, so there's all those kind of things in the lead up to the period that can cause a lot of brain fog as well and difficulty to concentrate. Do you find a lot of patients have issues with that? They just feel like they just can't, you know, make heads of tail or anything?
Yeah, absolutely. It's affecting, you know, every, I guess, part of the brain. So, yeah, you know, basic, you know, executive functioning, you know, memory, day-to-day tasks, all those things certainly become compromised. Part of that might be due to, you know, even just the fact that who can concentrate when they feel like their world's collapsing.
Mm.
You know, so I guess there's that, you know, that simple pathway there. Also can be an increase in neurological inflammation as well that comes with, you know, with the different detoxification of the hormones. And the other sort of way to think about it is it's a bit like because those sex hormones do play a role with your neurochemistry, it's almost like coming off an antidepressant all at once. So, you know, I guess that's that sort of normal, like brain fog, headachey, you know, nothing just feels right. So definitely, you know, just doing simple tasks like thinking and, you know, like you mentioned, brain fog, definitely common to see with people that are suffering.
Yeah, and it really does, you know, that whole feeling tired and irrational and just snappy and you just can't cope with anything. And of course, you know, so you've got all of that going on emotionally, but then it also can manifest itself through the skin as well, you know. So not only do we feel horrible inside, we then start to, by our own perception, feel awful on the outside. Tell us about some of the skin issues that are caused by hormones.
Yeah, so I guess the, you know, some of the typical things that would, I guess, lead someone to, you know, having things like PMS or PMDD or any other sort of, I guess, hormone-related neurological imbalance, often it comes back to, you know, poor detoxification or, you know, just nutrient deficiencies and things like that. So, for example, if you're low in, say, things like zinc or vitamin D, the body is unable to regulate some of those hormones like testosterone. or clear testosterone out. So around ovulation, you'll get a spike in both testosterone and progesterone, which are androgens. And if you're low in zinc or vitamin D, the liver can't liberate vitamin A properly, which has an anti-androgen effect. So that's why women will get acne in the lead up to a period. And then also that zinc's required to help the detoxification of those hormones. So again, if you're low in like things like zinc or vitamin D, you'll certainly see, you know, typically it's those that I guess that androgenic acne. So, you know, it might be chin, jawline, you know, neck, you know, backs of shoulders, things like that. So that's definitely a sign of, I'm going to say, hormone imbalance as opposed to like just a skin problem.
Yeah. Yeah. And certainly the skin can really start to be quite lifeless and dull as well, can't it, in line with all these hormone imbalances?
Definitely.
Yeah. So one of the other things that can happen, and of course this, you know, can cause a lot of angst for women who are trying to manage their weight, is the sugar cravings that it drives. Talk to us about how the hormones are, again, taking that handbrake off to being able to control those sugar cravings.
Yeah, so women will often say to me, it goes from I like chocolate to I need chocolate. Which is probably why there's all these men racing off to 7-Eleven at 10 o'clock at night to get chocolate. But yeah, so again, it's those, you know, if you're low in serotonin and also low in dopamine, you're going to want more sugar and things like that. Mm. And there's also, you know, I always say to people, if you're stressed and anxious and feeling flat, you don't go, man, I feel absolutely lousy. I can't wait to eat a big bowl of vegetables and salad and, you know, lean protein. It's like, I just need to get through this second. And, you know, things like, I guess we all understand, but, you know, chocolate and sugar and those things, they definitely help activate serotonin and dopamine in the brain. So the body is saying, hey, I need a little bit of help here neurologically. If you eat the chocolate or the lollies or the ice cream, that's going to give me that quick little hit that I'm looking for.
It's such a false promise, isn't it?
Yes. Yes.
And we fall for it every time. I remember when I was pregnant one time, my husband near fatally ate the chocolate bar that I knew I had in the fridge, and I was just about beside myself, which probably leads us very neatly into how hormones can affect pregnancy. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. So I guess same sort of thing. Obviously with pregnancy, you're going to get changes in hormones. So progesterone, which we talked about, is I guess a nice hormone for women. So progesterone will rise with pregnancy. So they should have a nice, I guess, dopamine, progesterone surge, which is great. So I guess the handbrake to crazy is there. But then we often get quite high levels of estrogen, which can exacerbate things like morning sickness, for example. But then in some of the extremes, there's varying stages of pregnancy where the hormones, again, will hijack the brain. And women might think, you know what, I hate being pregnant. I hate my husband. I hate my life. I hate my partner. I need to get divorced. And again, it can really take you by surprise. And really, again, that whole logic. So you can be like, logically, I'm happy, I'm safe, I'm calm. But everything else is telling me the opposite. So I always say to women, just be aware that during pregnancy, there might be different stages where you want to run away or, you know, leave your husband or leave your partner, and just be mindful that that will pass.
Yeah, I think pregnancy was my first real wake-up call where I fully understood the power of hormones and that, you know, it wasn't just me in terms of like, you know, that I was a bad person or, you know, couldn't control my temper or things like that. I could really feel those hormones take over where it was like an out-of-body experience where I just actually couldn't control or, you know, to cry irrationally over something. And, you know, like I remember I couldn't stand the smell of the fridge, so I'd sit outside the fridge door and, you know, sob that I couldn't have a drink of water because it smelled funny. And it was just such a bizarre experience. But I think it really helped me tap into going, oh, that's what happens every month with my period, and to really understand the power of hormones. So it's quite fascinating.
Yeah. And, you know, further to the, you know, pregnancy thing, often postpartum as well is another key time where, you know, your neurotransmitters can get out of whack. So again, talking about things like postnatal anxiety or postnatal depression, one thing that will happen is in preparation for delivery, the body will increase its level of copper, and that will kick zinc out of the body, and that has a significant impact on neurotransmitters. So as soon as baby's born, we have that fundamental imbalance between zinc and copper, which can make women feel more depressed and anxious and things like that. And then, you know, if they're breastfeeding, those high levels of prolactin actually suppress progesterone. So prolactin and progesterone sit on a bit of a seesaw. So as prolactin's high, progesterone is low, which is why generally if you're breastfeeding, you won't have a regular period, because progesterone is what's part of ovulation. So the breastfeeding will suppress the progesterone, and then therefore you'll feel flat, unmotivated, tired, all those things. So yeah, there's often, you know, really key explanations for why someone might feel the way they do with certain hormones.
Yeah. And then of course, and I know we've had an episode where we talked about menopause and perimenopause, but at that time of the life, the hormones then kind of, you know, step up and give a good whack around again, don't they?
Yep, perimenopause, same thing. Low progesterone, high estrogen, handbrake to crazy is completely missing, and the crazy's turned up quite a bit.
James, do you know the best thing about sharing a building with you, and because I'm at the age of 45 now, is that I can come into work and I can just have a moan to you about these things, and you're a man that actually gets it. And you do often say that women do really get the rough end of things with this.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, speaking of which, you know, are men, you know, subjective to these hormonal imbalances as well?
Yes, absolutely. So we talked a little bit briefly around testosterone. So testosterone, you know, in a man gives him like confidence, you know, decision-making ability, all those things. So there is a thing called like andropause. So as your testosterone, you know, as you age, your testosterone production definitely does wane. So if your testosterone's low and you might have relatively high estrogen, you'll find that your decision-making might be compromised. So if you, you know, say you're a man that's like, right, this is what we're doing, no questions asked, you know, you don't ever second-guess yourself. All of a sudden you're thinking, oh, well, if we do this, this might happen. If we do this, this might happen. And you start really questioning yourself and lose your confidence. So definitely hormones will affect men, and it's quite a significant impact as well. So that's I'm glad you brought that up, because it's something that really should be acknowledged and recognized as well.
And so is there a particular state, like is there an average age that that seems to happen with men?
Yeah, so testosterone will really sort of peak through, you know, teenage years. And then I guess the more recent research is showing, you know, even as early as sort of 25 onwards, in men it can start to fall away. You will probably really notice it, you know, sort of, I would say sort of late 30s, early 40s onwards, where you, again, you know, people, you know, when they say, oh, as soon as I turned 40, everything went downhill. So, that, you know, they'll pick up more injuries, they won't recover as well. And they're more, I guess, physical symptoms. But again, you know, the funny thing is, if you think about like a grumpy old man, right?
Yeah.
So we all think, oh, he must have lots of testosterone because he's grumpy and whinges about everything. But it's really often a lack of testosterone. So with that lack of testosterone, they're grumpier because nothing is right. So because it's like, I haven't changed, the world has changed around me. So, yeah. You know, things like they'll watch the TV and get angry about something on the news. And, you know, it's quite a profound thing as well, you know, when you think about depression that might occur for men later on in life. Certainly it's often related to testosterone.
Yeah, okay, interesting. And then stepping back a bit, you know, one of the other common stages, which I think has always been known for a stage of, you know, with real hormonal changes, is the teenage years. Tell us about the teenage years and how hormones play a role in, you know, males and females during that part of their life.
Yes. So I guess if anyone's had a teenage daughter going through puberty.
I have a tween at the moment. It's already fun.
Yes. So it's actually not that their hormones are high, but the problem is that the receptors that are listening to the hormones are very sensitive. So then body's not producing excess hormones, it's just the receptors that listen to the hormones, they're quite sensitive, and I guess what we call like naive to hormones. So they're sensitive because they haven't ever had to see high levels. So once these hormones start surging, you know, progesterone, estrogen, all those things, what will happen is those receptors, it's a bit like they've got hearing aids on, so everything's really, really loud to them. So they get all these significant changes, you know, like we're talking about, you know, more emotional, more anxious, et cetera. And then that's probably exacerbated by, you know, all the things like social media and, you know, misunderstandings with friends, et cetera. But, yeah, it's not that the hormones are too high. It's just the body isn't used to it. And then when things kind of settle down, what is really happening there is that the receptors that are listening to the hormones have actually adjusted and they've gone, okay, this is how we need to listen. We don't need to go too far the other way.
Okay. And what about in boys?
Yeah, similar type of thing. Guys with, I guess, testosterone, which is one of those main hormones, again, that we'll see higher. They might be a bit more aggro, a bit more, you know, confident. Yeah, so it's similar sort of things. Again, it's that receptor sensitivity that is quite high. And then so if they're getting like what we'd call like a normal level of testosterone, but the hearing aids are right on, so they hear those signals from the hormones really quite loudly and clearly. Mm. And that's where that, I guess, some of that aggro, you know, extra confidence, you know, walking around with your chest puffed out type of thing can happen. Again, I guess, you know, that, you know, we always talk about the male brain kind of doesn't really settle down until, you know, guys are sort of 25 yeah. onwards. And I guess that's part of that receptor idea where the receptors kind of, I guess they adjust and adapt to how things should be.
Yeah. And asking for a friend here completely, not for my benefit at all, but teenage boys, like, is it hormones that causes that feeling that it's like their brains have fallen out and they're walking around in permanent brain fog? Like, you know, forget everything, can't remember, you know, what to do.
Yeah, I think it again could come down to very similar things, like some of those nutrient deficiencies that could be there. So often I talked about zinc copper ratio as being really important. Kids typically have lower zinc than they do copper, which is like a normal part of growth and things like that. So when we see that ratio in kids being out of whack, we kind of go, yep, that's normal, par for course. But again, going back to the fact that we need testosterone to, we need zinc to help testosterone be cleared out effectively. So you will see this similar sorts of things if there are deficiencies. So that's why, you know, boys will get more acne, you know, around puberty, just because they've got lower levels of zinc. And equally, same things like vitamin D, which is, you know, really important for, you know, adjusting neurological inflammation. And then again, if they're stuck in that reptilian boy brain where it's just, you know, the only thing I guess they're interested in is themselves. And I guess, you know, that there's a lot of things that it, you know, will, I guess, lead to those sorts of behaviors. But I certainly remember thinking when I was that age that I knew everything and I was an adult and,
yeah,
you know, everyone should do everything for me because I'm the man now.
Yep.
But yeah, we learn our lessons.
Yeah, absolutely. It comes back to bite us when we become parents, that's for sure. And I think that's one of the key takeaways here. If we draw the correlations here, quite often living in the same house at the same time, you have a male in their 40s going through quite a hormonal shift, a woman in her 40s going through a hormonal shift, and a teenager going through hormonal shifts, which makes for some fun and games. So for anyone who's in that stage of life, we're hanging out there with you. And so talk to us about some of the ways that you can treat hormonal imbalances and help, I guess, put that handbrake back on for, you know, to stop the crazy.
So yeah, I guess if we talk about things like PMS and PMDD, so if we know that progesterone is an issue, we want to work pretty well with how do we support progesterone. So things like zinc and magnesium and vitamin D and iodine are really powerful nutrients that help support progesterone. One of the other herbs that I like to use is Vitex. So we talked about prolactin and progesterone. Vitex actually suppresses prolactin, so then you get a better progesterone surge. So that's a nice way to improve the handbrake to crazy. And then if we do sense that there's problems with excess estrogen or poor estrogen detoxification, we can support that through things like broccoli sprout, which helps clear that out. Again, magnesium. Magnesium does everything, in case no one already knows that. But magnesium is one of those key nutrients that also helps detoxify estrogen. And often, you know, we talked about sugar cravings and things like that, and chocolate is a pretty good source for magnesium. Mm. So maybe there's something in that that women really want chocolate around premenstrual time because their body's like, hey, I need magnesium. Maybe not the best form, but yeah.
And probably not a whole block of peppermint chocolate.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah, those key nutrients are really, really important. So, you know, zinc, magnesium, vitamin D, you know, iodine, Vitex and broccoli sprout, they're amazing, amazing nutrients to really support that. And, you know, you would have noticed that none of those are actually working on, you know, mood stuff, so to speak. So none of it's like, oh, how do we calm you down with, you know, things that, you know, improve serotonin? It's really about correcting the hormones, which then leads to better neurological balances.
Yeah. And, you know, it comes back to your whole thing of, you know, treating the root causes, not just the symptoms. You know, like you said, sometimes, you know, some medical professionals are really quick to just recommend antidepressants, but, you know, that's actually not a solution to what is going on and sometimes not necessary. There's absolutely a time and place where it is required and can be helpful. But I know certainly in my personal experience, you know, once you're able to start managing, you know, that root cause, the symptoms do really start to alleviate.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, that was a goodie of a topic to discuss there, James. I think we really delved into that one, and hopefully that helped provide some really valuable answers to people, and, you know, that they know they can reach out to a health professional such as yourself and, you know, help find some answers and help get those handbrakes onto crazy. So moving on to a couple of our frequently asked questions now. So the first question we have for you today, James: I was diagnosed with reflux 2 years ago and my doctor put me on Nexium, which relieves the symptoms, but I've heard this can be bad long term. Is there a natural way to treat it?
Yeah, so this is a really common thing that we'll see in clinic. So Nexium is one of those things that stops, well, it's called a proton pump inhibitor, so it reduces the production of stomach acid. So reflux is really where the stomach acid is going up outside of the stomach and into the esophagus, where acid shouldn't be. So that's why it, you know, burns, hurts, etc. So simply taking away the stomach acid, yeah, might seem like a great idea. And it is certainly great for symptom relief, but again, we're always like, why is that happening? So one of the common reasons for reflux is actually a bacterial overgrowth in the small intestine. So the stomach will empty into the small intestine. And if we have a bacterial overgrowth in that small intestine, when that food hits that bacteria, it starts to ferment. And normally that small intestine should be relatively clear of bacteria. So not too many bacteria should be there. So if we're getting a fermentation reaction in that small intestine, those gases that will be produced will put backwards pressure up into the stomach, which then will lead to reflux. So my favorite way to sort of treat reflux is really to clear out that small intestine and actually improve digestion. And one of the concerns that people have with taking things like Nexium, which stop or significantly reduce stomach acid, is it's then compromising your digestion. Because obviously we have stomach acid for a reason, and its job is actually to cleanse that small intestine as well as break down the food and, you know, make it into smaller pieces. So that's why people often, if they've been on, you know, things like Nexium, you know, for a couple of years, once they come off it, they then have developed an even worsening of that bacterial overgrowth in that small intestine. They'll feel like they can't come off it at all. So they'll get rebound reflux straight away. Yeah. And again, if you're compromising digestion, you're going to see nutrient deficiencies. So things like zinc and magnesium, often iron and B12. And that's why Nexium and a lot of those proton pump inhibitors were really initially only licensed for 6 weeks use, not, you know, 16 years. So. Yeah. I love that question. I love helping people out with that one.
How frequently are you seeing patients with this reflux issue in clinic?
Well, I guess if I go back to my pharmacy days, I would have said that probably a good, you know, every day, you know, in a normal dispensary, you would be dispensing, you know, things like, you know, Nexium and the other PPIs. You would be doing 20 or 30 more scripts a day of that.
Wow.
So incredibly common. Again, most people, if they have reflux, they'll go see the doctor. The doctor put them on Nexium. They'll go, yep, great, that works. problem solved. So they don't really think about, you know, anything else because it, I guess it's alleviated those symptoms. But most of the time, I'm seeing the people that go, look, I've heard it's bad for me, a bit like this FAQ. Mm. I've heard it's bad for me. I don't want to be on it. How do I get off it? Or is there, you know, any other way to treat it? So maybe 3 or 4 times a week I would see someone specifically with you know, some sort of bacterial overgrowth, which, you know, they're you know, wanting to change. So, yeah, it's very common.
Wow, fascinating. All right, and our last question for today. I suffer from endometriosis. I've heard that diet plays a role in managing symptoms. Is that true?
Yes, yes, categorically, yes, it is true. So endometriosis, I guess when you see a doctor or a gynecologist, it's considered as a gynecological problem, when in actual fact, it's really a condition of the immune system. So the usual sort of treatment for endometriosis, you know, if you think about, you know, medications, it's all about shutting down that endocrine system. It's like, let's shut the hormones down. But hormones are only playing some role in that. And it's all about managing the inappropriate activation of the immune system. So one of the biggest triggers for endometriosis is things like those inflammatory cytokines that move through the peritoneal cavity, which are, they're affected by bacteria in the gut and they're affected by the foods that we eat. So anything that we put in our body that creates inflammation is going to feed that inflammatory process. So when we go back to food specifically, we look at things like gluten and dairy as definitely big ticket items that create a lot of inflammation for people, which is going to feed and flare up endometriosis. And the other food groups that we often look at are the histamine-rich foods, and which the histamine-rich foods are really quite common and healthy foods as well. Mm. So that's what makes it tricky. So if you're someone that's, you know, say you've cut out, you know, gluten and dairy, you go, yep, that's better, but I'm still getting some symptoms. Often we might need to move into those histamine-rich foods, which can be things like, you know, nuts and seeds, strawberries, avocado, bananas, tomatoes. So things that you would normally think are great whole foods that are healthy, but can still flare up and create an aggravation of symptoms. So usually we'll put people on a gluten and dairy-free diet with the low histamine diet attached to that as well. And what we'll do is we'll just work backwards until we work out what, you know, what can that person tolerate. But I would say diet plays one of the biggest and most significant roles in managing endometriosis.
Yeah. And James, I know that you're very empathetic to how much women can suffer with endometriosis. And I know this is something you're really passionate about helping them with. Like, you know, are you, when you're treating them with these dietary changes, are you seeing quite a significant change in their symptoms and their quality of life?
Yeah, absolutely. Endometriosis can have, I guess, different stagings of severity. So stage 4 being the worst. And so quite often I'll see women that have stage 4 endometriosis. And, you know, they're usually young women that don't want to just have like a hysterectomy or something like that. So, you know, they're mindful of wanting to have children and all those things. So that isn't an option. And then, of course, shutting down the endocrine system with, you know, things like, you know, some of the drugs like the contraceptive pills or the bars, they're not interested in as well because they're mindful of fertility. So they've got to try for kids but have these horrible, painful periods, you know, for years. So short answer to your question is yes, we have seen significant improvements in those people. And it's really about understanding, you know, are there any nutrient deficiencies that are leading to extra inflammation? You know, are there foods that we can take away that are contributing to inflammation? And again, if we reduce that inflammation, the body is happy, it can do what it wants. And I think because our diets are so inflammatory and we have so many, I guess our gut microbiome is becoming poorer and poorer. That's why we're seeing an increased, you know, incidence of endometriosis. Not only are we getting better at picking up on it and screening it and not just going, hey, painful periods are normal, but I think it's our lifestyles that we're, you know, that definitely exacerbate all of that as well.
Yeah, well, that's certainly great to know that, you know, there are some answers and some possible solutions there to help ease people's suffering. So I think that's quite a nice inspiring note to wrap today's podcast up with. We are coming to the end of season one. We've only got one episode left. So I'm looking forward to getting back on the pod with you and chatting more next week for the next episode.
Cool. Thanks, Julie. We hope you enjoyed this episode of What the Health. If you want to keep hearing more, follow us on the Apple Podcast app, where you'll be notified every week when we drop a new episode.
And if you love the show and want to support us, feel free to share this podcast with your friends and family, or go and leave us a review.
Yes, please help us make Julie's life easier when she's trying to market this podcast.
Of course, it would be remiss of me not to mention that you can go book a consultation in person or online with James to discuss all your health concerns. Head on over to www.hellohealth.au. Plus, you'll get free postage on any products you purchase.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.